Hello and welcome to episode number 11 of the AFTV Newscast. My name is Elias Saba. I'm the guy who runs AFTVnews.com, which I'm told is the best source for Fire TV news and anything Fire TV related. This is where I cover the week's Fire TV news and then follow up by answering your questions. So every Thursday I post a questions and topics post on AFTVnews.com, and you guys submit your questions. Looks like we've got a bunch of questions this week. I'll first get into the news, which is pretty light. You know, coming after a Fire TV release, there's not too much news. I've got some new guides that I'll talk about. Talk about the recent software update and hopefully what's coming up software update wise. And then we'll jump into questions. So let's go ahead and get started with the news. All right, first up in Fire TV news is that the Fire TV gaming bundle, the new one, the 4K version, has now gone out of stock also. Last week, the regular Fire TV bundle went out of stock, and that was pretty much as a result of that sale, that mistaken sale that happened that brought the price down by $20. But now the gaming bundle here has also gone out of stock. So the gaming bundle is showing a restock date of November 3rd, whereas the Fire TV regular bundle is now showing a November 4th restock date. It originally showed October 19th restock, then it got pushed to October 30th, and now it's getting pushed to October 4th. I just found out today, so this is kind of a little hint of an exclusive coming up. Hopefully I'll have a nice full article about this on Monday, but you guys listening to the podcast and you guys watching live will kind of get this a little early, a little special treat. I've been contacted by one of my sources that works at Amazon who wants to remain anonymous, but I definitely trust this source a lot. Briefly, there is a reason why the Fire TV is out of stock, and it's not what you guys probably think. Some people are kind of speculating that Amazon is holding back the Fire TV stock until they fix the bugs and fix the issues that are surrounding it. That's not the case. I can't tell you yet exactly why the Fire TV is out of stock, but you know it legitimately is not available for sale to people. They don't have them to sell. That's why it's out of stock, but there's a reason why they don't have them available to sell, and it's not because they're artificially holding them back. You know, it's not like there's a warehouse full of Fire TVs just sitting there and Amazon is choosing not to sell them. That's not the case. Again, I'll post all the details. I don't know all of them right now. I just found out earlier this morning, and so I don't want to say anything until I know the facts completely, but it looks like the reason they're out of stock is a really good reason, and you'll be happy what Amazon is doing right now. And it is related to the bugs, but it's not just that they're holding back the stock and, you know, choosing not to sell them or anything like that. Again, you know, I know some of you might get a little annoyed that I'm not really giving you all the info right now, but, you know, I don't like to just blurt out stuff that I hear without like kind of figuring it all out in detail first. So that's just a little hint to you, you podcast listeners and you YouTube AFTV newscast watchers out there. All right. Speaking of software updates, next up in Fire TV news is that this week we started seeing the surround sound Dolby Digital Plus software update fix start rolling out. All second generation Fire TVs should already have gotten this software update. It's update version 5.0.2.2. Previous one was 5.0.2.1. Now, this update only contains a fix for Dolby Digital Plus. It does not fix Dolby Digital or all the other kind of issues that are surrounding the Fire TV right now. This update was very tiny. It was only like 14, 15 megabytes. So it seemed like it was literally just a single fix for Dolby Digital Plus on third-party apps like Netflix, Plex, that sort of stuff. So there are definitely still audio issues in general with Dolby Digital. There are still issues with the remote having Wi-Fi, you know, connection issues. Amazon's aware of these issues. They're fixing them. So Amazon has said an update for older Dolby Digital systems will be distributed on November 30th. Now, I don't know if they've, you know, actually got that locked in or if it's supposed to be by November 30th, but, you know, their wording was on November 30th. So in about a month and a half, at the latest, it looks like we'll get a nice update that will fix Dolby Digital at the very least, and probably a lot more. Part of the out of stock news that I got this morning from within Amazon, it also related to the bugs that are around the second generation device and that Amazon is working on them. And so they're aware of a whole slew of bugs. So anything you've probably run into, they're probably aware of it, and they're, you know, I'm told they're working on it, and, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if if all these bug fixes are included in this, you know, November 30th release. Again, I'll have more info on the whole out of stock deal and the whole bug fix situation on Monday, hopefully. So next up, also related to software updates, is that the second generation Fire TV and Fire OS actually now update incrementally. So that means when you receive an update, you're not receiving literally the entire operating system in one package that just overwrites what's already on the Fire TV. So the first generation Fire TV, that's how it updated. Every single update was literally the entire operating system. And it wiped out the entire system partition, it's what's called, within Android. And so those updates were, you know, about 350 to 450 megabytes. That's why they usually, you know, took a while to download, took a while to install. I don't know if this is a change only with the second generation Fire TV or if it's related to Fire OS 5. And so that means, you know, it'll come to the first generation Fire TV when that gets updated to Fire OS 5. But the latest update, like I said, that took the Fire TV from the second generation Fire TV from 5.0.2.1 to 5.0.2.2. That was only 15 megabytes. So it was a very tiny update. So any of you out there with data caps on your internet connections, we'll probably be happy to hear that, you know, you're not going to get these massive 467 megabyte updates. That's the last first generation Fire TV update was 467 megabytes. So it's nice to see that they've switched to this incremental updating. Now, I mentioned in this article about the switch to incremental updates, how it will affect the pre-rooted ROMs just slightly. You know, before it was pretty easy. Whenever a new Fire TV update would start rolling out, I would sniff the network traffic and capture that URL that contains the update, and I'd pass that on to Rbox, and he would be able to pretty easily take that full package and, you know, basically create a pre-rooted ROM out of it. Now that we're switching to incremental updates, you know, I'll still be capturing those updates and I'll be passing them over to Rbox, but it just means that his job's a little more difficult now, where he has to take these incremental updates, add them to the existing pre-rooted ROM, and then he can release the pre-rooted ROM. So no worries on the first generation Fire TV. If it does switch to incremental updates, anybody who's rooted and who's installing these pre-rooted ROMs, according to Rbox, we should be able to get them, pre-rooted versions of them, out to people just fine, which is awesome. Now, as far as the second generation Fire TV, if that ever does become rooted, it'll be a little more difficult to get pre-rooted ROMs for that device because we don't have a base to work off of. The second generation Fire TV has received two updates so far, and they've both been incremental. So we don't have basically a single file that contains the entire operating system. So what that means is that somebody's going to have to dump the operating system off of the device. Now, when you're rooted, you can totally do that. The only trick is the operating system has to be unmodified. So usually when you root it, you modify the operating system, you modify system, you know, you include the SU, the super user utility in there, and that gives you access. So the super easy way is if somebody basically does the hardware root and just has direct access to the memory chip that's on the Fire TV, then they'll be able to dump it pretty easily. We don't know if somebody's going to do that. So we'll have to, hopefully, if we can gain root without actually modifying the system, then that means we'll be able to dump the system intact, and then it'll be pretty easy to create ROMs out of that. Next up, I briefly mentioned in the last podcast episode about how changes in Fire OS 5 kind of changed the way apps can write to external storage. So Fire OS 5, which is based off of Android Lollipop, has a lot more restrictions for apps. They can't just freely write anywhere onto external storage. They can only write to external storage if they're granted explicitly granted permission to write to certain directories. Now, it was CCIE study on Reddit and Joe Kalla on XDA. I came across basically on the same day comments from both of them mentioning that an app can write to external storage on Fire OS 5 without asking for permission if it is writing to kind of its own little sandbox directory. Those with second generation Fire TVs running Fire OS 5, you can now move Kodi completely over to external storage. I've updated my guide thoroughly. You can find links in the show notes of the podcast, of the YouTube episode, to my guide about how to move Kodi files to external storage. So if you're waiting on that, guide is up to date. You can totally move it. You can move files both either to micro SD cards or to USB drives connected to the second generation Fire TV. So the benefit of moving Kodi to external storage is really just to free up internal space. You know, that 8 gigabytes of internal storage on the Fire TV is limited. So, you know, a lot of people like to store data, their Kodi data, onto external storage just to free up that space, since mostly the thumbnail. So my guide actually is separated into two parts. One part is to move all of Kodi in its entirety to external storage. The other part is just to move the thumbnail directory to external storage, because those thumbnails, if you have a big Kodi library, will take up a lot of space. So check out those guides. They're in the show notes. So next up is I wrote a new guide about how to unroot the Fire TV. I know a lot of people don't like this kind of guide. There are a lot of people out there who wish they could root, but I've gotten a lot of requests for this guide. There are people out there who rooted their Fire TV early on, but you know, since Amazon has been adding nice new features like external storage on the first generation Fire TV, that sort of stuff, people have kind of had fewer and fewer reasons to root the Fire TV. So a lot of people wanted to unroot. So I wrote this guide. The process is very straightforward, very briefly going over it just so you get an idea. You first need to install pre-rooted ROM version 51.1.4.0. Before I get into the rough rundown, this guide is written specifically for people who have the pre-rooted ROMs installed. If you've just rooted and haven't actually, you know, installed Clockwork Mod or installed a pre-rooted ROM of any sort, really all you have to do is let the device update over the air and it will get rid of root. But if you have installed the pre-rooted ROMs and you want to just revert everything back to completely stock, all you have to do is install the 51.1.4.0 pre-rooted ROM. The reason you have to do that is the latest ROM that does not use the boot menu. And so installing that will actually overwrite the boot menu and kind of restore the boot process to stock, essentially. There are ways to restore it, you know, without installing this ROM, but it's just a lot easier, you know, since most people know how to install this ROM. It's a lot easier to just install the ROM, and that kind of restores the boot menu thing. And then after that, you have to just download and transfer the stock recovery and download and transfer the stock OS, basically, which is the update. And then it just takes a couple ADB commands that you have to run, and that, you know, the first command will flash the stock recovery back onto the Fire TV, and the, you know, then later down in the tutorial is the command on how to make the Fire TV install the stock software. The whole process is pretty straightforward. I got a kick out of this first comment to the guide, so I got to point out. So Nosebleed here says, "You forgot the last step. Punch yourself in the face." So I thought I got a big kick out of that one. He's saying that because if you have a rooted Fire TV, a lot of people would really like to have a rooted Fire TV. So one of the things I mentioned in the guide is that you should consider selling the rooted Fire TV either on eBay or on Craigslist, you know, if you care enough, and just buy yourself a brand new Fire TV, for example. You know, you can usually get more for a rooted Fire TV than you can a non-rooted Fire TV. So once you unroot, there's no going back. You're basically stuck unrooted. But that guide is there. You can find it. I'll include links to it in the show notes, of course. So moving along to new app news. I always like to end the news section with what new interesting apps have come out. And we got a lot of new games, actually. But before we get into the games here, Yahoo released their first official video app for the Fire TV. So this app will stream all of Yahoo's original content. For example, they got the rights to produce basically the newest season of Community, and so that's available to stream free from this app. They've also got some rights to the Buffalo Bills versus Jacksonville Jaguars NFL game. So that's going to happen, you know, just in 10 days, 9 days or so. So that's going to happen in London on October 25th, and it's going to stream live through this Yahoo app for free. So really awesome to see that this new app came to the Fire TV. Right now it's only available for the first generation Fire TV and Fire TV Stick. I don't know if that's changed since I posted about this 4 days ago, but I'm sure it's just a matter of time before the app makes its way over to the second generation Fire TV also. So moving on to some interesting new games that came out this week. A lot of new games, actually. So Minecraft Story Mode. That's the Telltale version of Minecraft that's kind of very story-driven. It's kind of like a click adventure, they call it, where you're not fully controlling, you know, in a free world like Minecraft, but a highly anticipated game. A lot of people are waiting for this. You can get it now. Do know that you only get the first episode. It's a five-part episode. You know, the game is kind of chopped up into five episodes, just like all of Telltale's games. So buying the game for $4.99 right now will only get you the first episode. Another new game that's out, Gods Will Be Watching. This one's also another kind of click adventure. What do they call it? Point and click adventure. So you're not fully just kind of controlling a character normally. You're kind of just making decisions and playing the game that route. This game, again, also is in parts. Right now it's on sale for $1.99 for the first part. And, you know, you can always unlock the other parts through in-app purchases. But you can check that out. This game is actually compatible with Fire TV Stick, which is awesome. You know, the graphics are very rudimentary, so you don't need a crazy GPU like the ones in the Fire TV and the Fire TV 2 to play. So nice Fire TV Stick game that came out. Also released this week was Jackbox Party Pack 2. So this is pretty pricey at $25, but it includes five different kind of party games, you can call them. So the cool thing about these games is that they all are pretty much playable through smartphones. So if you go to, I think, jackbox.tv, that's how you connect to the game. So you can start the game on the Fire TV, and then everybody playing can just take out their smartphones or a tablet or even a laptop, and they can kind of play that way. There are five different games. You can check them out. Bit pricey, but, you know, Jackbox usually sells each of these games for $10 each, you know, between $5 and $10 each. So, you know, getting the whole pack for $25 is actually a pretty decent deal. Definitely the best family, you know, party type games available on the Fire TV. You know, probably this Jackbox pack, so it's kind of fun to have. Next up in new games is the release of Final Fantasy 3 and 4 to the new Fire TV and the old Fire TV. We saw, what was it, about a month ago or so, we saw the release of Final Fantasy 5 and 6, so now we've got 3 and 4. So if you're a fan of the Final Fantasy series, they're RPG-type games, role-playing games, you know, these games are really long, so you'll get a lot of play value out of these. So if you like those kind of games, check those out. All right, next up, let's move into your questions. Every week, like I said, I post a post on AFTVnews.com on every Thursday asking for you guys to submit questions. If you're watching live, you can always tweet me at AFTVnews. And I'm monitoring Twitter live right now. So if you got questions live or you want me to follow up on something that I said while I'm answering questions or anything, feel free to tweet me live. I'll monitor that answer during the episode. We've got a lot of questions here, it seems. I will pretty much always answer all the questions live, but for the actual recorded version release, I usually just include the, you know, more interesting questions just to kind of keep the podcast at right around an hour. So let's get right into questions. First question from Schofield. He says, hi, I've noticed that in AFTV2 in Kodi under system info hardware, the total memory is around 1500 megabytes and the free memory is around 400 megabytes. In AFTV Gen 1, at the same section, the total memory is around 1940, and the free memory is around 1000 megabytes. So what's up with that? It seems that the Gen 1 has 500 megabytes of RAM more. Yeah, that's actually not the case. So both the first generation Fire TV and the second generation Fire TV both have 2 gigabytes of memory. You know, it's a single physical chip. It's like pretty much the largest chip that's on the whole board is the memory. The reason that the second generation Fire TV only reports 1500 megabytes, whereas the first generation reports basically the 2 gigabytes, like within Kodi or within any kind of utility app that you kind of sideload onto the Fire TV, it's basically just a difference in the chip. The first generation Fire TV used a Qualcomm chip. Second generation Fire TV uses a MediaTek chip, and it just has to do with how each chip reports what the GPU is essentially using. So in both cases, the GPU has access to that 2 gigabytes and it uses that 2 gigabytes of memory. In the MediaTek chip, it actually allocates that roughly 500 megabytes of memory. So on the second generation Fire TV, it reserves that 500 megabytes of memory for the GPU. So they both still have the same amount of memory. It's just how it's allocated, basically. And so the second generation Fire TV, it doesn't report that 2 gigabytes as far as the, you know, for the CPU, just because it's allocating that 500 for the GPU. A lot of people think of it like they did with PCs, because PCs have dedicated graphics cards and have dedicated memory onto those graphics cards. On mobile phones and on the Fire TV, on these mobile chips, they call them system on a chips, SoCs. The GPU, while it's a dedicated GPU, it's actually, you know, a different processor on the system on a chip. It's not like a physically separate board or anything like you would think in a regular PC. And so it doesn't have its own memory chip, you know? So that's why there's a bit of confusion when you see, well, there's 500 megabytes of the 2 gigabyte memory used by the GPU. It's basically the same as the first generation Fire TV. It's just that because there are different architectures on the system on a chip, switching from Qualcomm to MediaTek, It just kind of reports it differently, basically. So, you know, there's no worry. You're not losing 500, you know, megabytes somewhere. It's, you know, that's just how the system is reporting that 2 gigabytes. You know, some of it is being allocated to the GPU. Next question from Jensen says, hey, great site. I love the second gen AFTV on paper, but my app performance has stuttered. My Kodi experience has suffered and this purchase hasn't justified its price tag. I still have my first generation AFTV. So do you think I should return the newer model and just use the older one? Or do you think these problems stem from a buggy OS that will be fixed in updates? Appreciate any advice. Actually, my answer to that question is probably yes for both. I probably do think, you know, you should return the second one, but I do also think that they will fix these bugs. So again, as I mentioned earlier, I just got word from Amazon, kind of more detail about all the different bugs that are being worked on. You know, I don't know, I don't have like a definitive list of all the bugs, but definitely I think the performance issues that you might be facing are probably, you know, due to these bugs that are just kind of around the second generation Fire TV. I do think they will improve. So if it's just a little bit of stuttering issue, I would hold off on returning the second gen Fire TV until the next software update. But that said, if you don't have a 4K TV and you're not really into gaming and don't need that extra horsepower, then I think the first generation Fire TV is still a rock solid device. There's not that much reason to upgrade from a first gen to a second gen, honestly. There's, I think, no problem. If you're mostly just using your Fire TV for Kodi purposes, the first generation Fire TV is definitely rock solid. Go for it. Go ahead and return that second gen and just hold off, you know, hopefully down the line, maybe another sale comes around or something like that, and then you can pick up the second gen then, or just wait till like the third gen or maybe even a new Fire TV stick. So Richie chimes in on Twitter and asks, any idea if the shopping and Kindle app will be available on the Fire TV? Yeah, as far as shopping, so a few months back I basically uncovered in one of the Fire TV updates that Amazon is working on a full-fledged shopping feature for the Fire TV, for both first gen and second gen. I found out since then that just before they were basically ready to release this new shopping feature, which is basically going to let you fully shop Amazon and buy, you know, almost anything Amazon sells through the Fire TV. Just before they were ready to release that, from higher up, basically they were told to hold back on it because they didn't like the whole kind of shopping cart checkout process. So they're holding back. They're going to redo that, and then they're going to release this new shopping feature for the Fire TV. I would guess that right now it's on hold because of all these bugs. I think Amazon is basically not working on new features right now at all, and they're just working, you know, I bet you they have all their team working on all these bug fixes right now. So, you know, that shopping feature is probably even more delayed now that this second gen Fire TV has come out. But Richie, it will still come out, for, is what I'm told. As far as the Kindle app, are you talking about like reading books on your TV? If that's the case, I haven't heard anything about that, and I don't think Amazon will ever release that for the TV. I know there are like audiobook options available through Alexa that will probably be expanded, but I don't think actual text Kindle books are going to come to the Fire TV. I haven't heard anything, and I personally don't think it'll arrive. Next question from Stank. Patiently waiting for an OS update for the Fire TV Stick and Fire TV 1. Have you heard anything? Also, are apps automatically updated under Fire OS? And is there no way to see change logs of the apps that have been updated? Yeah, so initially what I heard, this was before the second generation Fire TV came out, was that Fire OS 5, the official final version, would come out on the Fire TV Stick and Fire TV Gen 1 sometime in October. I would guess that is going to be pushed probably until November, maybe even later, just because of all the issues that are surrounding Fire OS 5. And that's probably a good thing that we're not getting that, you know, kind of buggy version right now. So it'll probably be a little while, at least a month, I would think, probably more, before the Fire TV Stick and Fire TV Gen 1 get updated. As far as automatic updates for apps, you can go into the Fire TV settings and disable automatic updates. You know, I have a guide, I'll link it in the show notes, on how to manually update if you do have it disabled. Apps will basically, when you go to them on the home screen, right there on the recent section, there'll be a button that tells you to update the app if an update is available, if you've turned off automatic updates. So yeah, that's how automatic updates work. You can disable them, and if you do, then you have to just manually within each app, you know, there's no notification. There's nothing that pops up that says an update is available unless you actually go to the app. Then you'll see like a new button that says update. As far as the changelog goes, Amazon doesn't have an official section for app developers to submit changelogs, but a lot of developers will put it in either the description or the features section of, you know, the app description, basically. Yeah, unfortunately, there is no official changelog or any way to really check for a changelog on the apps. It's up to the developer whether they want to include that in the information on the description. Most of them do, so definitely check the actual app's detail information. You know, you could do it from right within the Fire TV. If you go to more info on the app, you'll see the developer's description, and usually in there they'll write what has updated. But unfortunately, when, say, the next update comes out, you know, most developers will remove the information for the previous update, so you can't really see a historical changelog. Next question is from Steve. He says, do the USB flash drive and the micro SD card serve essentially the same purpose on the second generation Fire TV box? Is it important to have both? If I can only afford one or the other at this time, which would you recommend? That's a really good question. I covered this briefly in, I think it was the last episode. They don't serve essentially the same purpose on the second gen Fire TV, that's for sure. So the big difference is that you can only move apps to external storage on the micro SD card. You cannot move apps to the USB flash drive on the second generation Fire TV. So that's the biggest difference. So if the main purpose for external storage is to install more apps onto the device, definitely go with the micro SD card. If, however, the main purpose is to store media on external storage, like videos, even pictures or audio, you know, to access like with apps like Kodi, then it's kind of up to you which one you want to do. Usually you can get more storage on the USB flash drive than a micro SD card. Bang for your buck, you're probably better off going with a flash drive if you're planning to use external storage for media storage. But if you want to expand that tiny 8 gigabyte internal storage, definitely go with a micro SD card, because you cannot do that with the flash drive on the second gen Fire TV. So next question is from Ulysses Rodriguez. He's got a bunch of concerns about the various issues with Fire OS 5. So he says, what happened to Amazon that they launched an unfinished second generation Fire TV that apparently also came with Fire OS 5 totally full of bugs? He says he had a lot of issues with the remote, the Wi-Fi remote, and he's given up on it and he switched back to his old Bluetooth remote. He's also wondering about a low volume issue that he's experiencing with the second generation Fire TV. So I've been told with my source at Amazon that they're both of these issues, the Wi-Fi remote disconnecting or not connecting at all, and the low volume issue, they're aware of both of them and they're definitely on their list and they're working to fix them. I say have faith. It definitely is crappy that this new device is so buggy, but you know, thankfully it's not a hardware issue. The hardware is solid. This new box is more powerful than the first one and it will turn into a good box once Amazon releases hopefully the next big update or the next big set of updates. I don't know if they're going to be all released at once in one big update or if it's going to be several updates that lead up to kind of a stable box, but you know, don't give up hope. The new remote will be worked out and this low audio issue that you're experiencing will be fixed as well, is what I'm told. As far as the remote disconnecting, I've heard people have success changing the channel on their wireless router. There's interference there somehow sometimes. If you actually go into the Fire TV's settings system area and go to network, you can actually when you highlight your Wi-Fi connection, you can press play and it will scan and do kind of a status check. And it often will recommend which channel to connect to. So that's one thing to try, see what it recommends. Try switching to that channel. Also, I've heard people have luck switching to, if they're say on a wired connection, switching it to wireless, using it, you know, for a couple minutes with the new Wi-Fi remote while the Fire TV is on wireless and then switching back to wired. Again, these are all bugs. It's not just an inherent issue with being connected via Wi-Fi. They're bugs. So that's why kind of jumping through these weird hoops sometimes fixes the issues. So that's a little recommendation to get by. But yeah, if you've got the first generation remotes, definitely use those until these updates are fixed. I'm told the fixes will come in a 5.0.3 update version. So we'll see. Hopefully that will arrive within about a month. Next question from Steve P. Do you think it will ever be possible to get Android TV as an APK running on the Fire TV now that the second gen box is running Android Lollipop? I thought our box was looking into doing something along these lines when Android TV was first announced. Yeah, he was. You know, the guy got busy or it ran into problems and he didn't continue it, unfortunately. I do think it's possible. It's always possible. The problem with the Android TV launcher, I assume that's what you're talking about as an APK, not actual Android TV as an OS. But the problem with that is that it's a closed source platform, essentially. You know, if you want that APK to run, you can't really make changes to the APK. All you can do is make changes to the Fire TV itself. And without having roots on the second gen Fire TV, I don't think we'll be able to run the Android TV launcher. But, you know, once we get root, things will definitely change. As far as actual Android TV as an OS, I know there were people who were working on that for the first generation Fire TV, but they also either lost interest or got busy. I know the project wasn't completely dropped. It was, I forgot the guy's name. Was it Vendetta, I believe? He posts on XDA, but he hasn't completely given up on it. So hopefully when Fire OS 5 comes to the first gen Fire TV, we might actually get an Android TV or CyanogenMod ROM for the first generation Fire TV. But as far as Android TV's launcher running on the second generation Fire TV, that is usually dependent on a lot of Google services. While you can sideload those services, they don't really fully work on the second gen Fire TV. So it's not impossible, but it's kind of unlikely. You know, somebody has to really be dedicated to try to get that working. All right, next question from Dan. Is a Nexus 4K box likely? I've heard Google will offer Android TV more widely next year from a Chinese Android box company. Have you heard anything similar? So recently, Google has kind of played down Android TV. I think that's primarily because they just launched a brand new Chromecast, so they're kind of focusing on that. That's the newest device they have for the TV, so they're kind of talking about that right now and not so much about Android. So I saw a lot of interviews with Google executives when, you know, talking about the new Chromecast versus the Android TV boxes, and they were kind of trying to play down Android TV. But according to what I've heard, Google seems to be focusing more on Android TV being pre-installed on TVs themselves as opposed to coming on boxes. I haven't heard anything about Chinese boxes. Again, nothing I've heard internally. This is just what I've read in various, you know, news articles and interviews with Google execs. So it's kind of business as usual for Google. They tend to release new things like a new OS, like Android TV, and just kind of let it sit there until they're ready to do more with it. You know, that's kind of how Google does things. It's unfortunate, but that's just how it is. Yeah, so I don't have too much faith in Android TV right now. I don't think Google's giving up on it, but they're not like, you know, gung-ho behind it like Amazon is, you know, behind the Fire TV. Next question from Dustin. He asks, what are your impressions of the Fire TV game controller? I haven't used it too much. I assume you're talking about the new one, not the old one. I haven't gotten to use it too much. I've only had it for, you know, a couple weeks or so. But my initial impressions are good. I like it better, the feel-wise, than the first generation game controller. I think the buttons feel a little better. They are not as slippery. The D-pad is a huge improvement, I think. I never liked the D-pad on the first one, so that's a huge improvement. The joysticks feel about the same, not too big of an improvement. Overall feel of the controller itself, I think, feels better than the old one. It doesn't have that as big of a clunky battery compartment. It's kind of more integrated in. It doesn't have kind of the sharp edges like the old one had. Overall, I like it. You know, it's pricey for sure at $50. If you're not going to do too much gaming, I would pass on the game controller. Maybe, you know, get either like a refurbished first gen controller if you're just going to do it occasional gaming. But if you're going to play any of the, you know, higher end better games, I definitely say get the new controller. It's well worth it. Well worth the $50 in my opinion. Compatibility wise, there's no beating the game controller, the official game controller, that is. I know Fire TV supports third party Bluetooth controllers, but you know, some games just might not work that well with them. You'll definitely have more issues there. There is an advantage to paying for the official game controller over cheaper third party controllers, but yeah, my overall opinion is, you know, thumbs up. I really like the new game controller. Definitely an improvement over the first gen one. Next question from Otis saying, why optical is so important? Sorry, an HDMI cable is ran from a device to a TV. Then the optical cable goes from the TV to the receiver. What most people don't know is that the vast majority of TVs downsample this to stereo. I don't mean $200 Gold Star from Walmart. Most TVs from low to high end from all manufacturers don't output DD or DTS. That's why optical is a must for anyone with surround sound. Yeah, so this isn't so much a question, more of a topic, which is, you know, very welcome. I don't get these too much, but if there's a topic you guys just want me to kind of comment on my opinion on it, and it's not really a question, I'm more than happy to talk about it. So yeah, definitely this is the case. There's nothing beats a dedicated optical connection coming out of you know, the streaming box, like, you know, the first generation Fire TV, that going either to your TV or better yet going to AV receiver. You can't beat that. I know a lot of these TVs have the ability to, you know, take HDMI in and then put optical audio out. But yeah, like Otis here says, you rely on the TV then to do perfect pass-through of all the different audio formats. And a lot of these TVs just don't do a good job of it. It's much better if you buy an AV receiver to go HDMI to the receiver. And then if you need optical out of that, it usually does a better job than optical out on your TV. But definitely, if you want the best audio, the first gen box is optical out. You know, you can't really beat that. That's a great feature. Next question from Kinseki says, I installed the Firestarter 3.1 on Fire TV 2. The Fire TV 2 is connected to the receiver via HDMI cable. Every time I turn off the receiver, the Fire TV 2 auto triggers to turn on the receiver again. The only current solution is putting Fire TV 2 into sleep mode before turning off the receiver. Is Firestarter the problem? Question mark, he says. If yes, is there any way to modify the settings of Firestarter to solve this problem? If not, please help. I don't know if Firestarter is the issue. I do know that both Fire TV first gen and the second gen have what's called CEC, which lets the Fire TV basically turn on your TV through the HDMI cable. So most likely that's the issue. I don't know if it's a Firestarter thing or a Fire TV 2 thing. Maybe it's just another bug. Definitely, I would try uninstalling Firestarter just to see if your receiver turns on like that again. I know you can buy a little like HDMI inline thing you can put that kind of strips out CEC. They're not too expensive if you continue having this problem. But I would wait, you know, just manually put the Fire TV to sleep until the next big software update to see if that fixes the issue. You know, it could just be another one of the bugs that, you know, is in FireOS 5. Next question from Stank is, should all apps/data/media be installed on the micro SD on the AFTV 2? What should or shouldn't be installed there? And he says, I ask this because I've never used an SD card before on a device, Apple guy that's branching out. That's a good question, Stank. So the only downside for installing something on the micro SD card as opposed to internal storage is read and write times for the different types of memory. The Fire TV can read from and write to internal storage faster than it can on the micro SD card. That said, most apps do not need fast read-write times. So I would definitely say install all apps, all media, all data onto the micro SD card. And then if you run into a kind of sluggish load times or something for an app, then you can try moving it to internal storage and seeing if that improves. For the most part, most apps, you won't see a difference because when an app launches, most of that app is going to be stored into the Fire TV's 2 gigabytes of memory. So in that initial load might be a little bit slower if the app is stored on external storage versus internal storage. So if there's an app that you're launching all the time, if you've got the room on internal storage, put it there. It'll launch a little bit faster maybe. But for the most part, it's totally fine to put everything on external storage. I'd say again, best to put it all on external storage. And then if there's an app that you just feel is a little sluggish and you wish would go a little faster, try moving that to internal storage, seeing if that improves, you know. And basically just reserve your internal storage for the apps you absolutely use the most often. That's my recommendation there. All right, next questions are from Lewis. He says, I hope you're doing fine. Should be present tonight. It's the perfect Friday night leisure after a week of hard work. Thank you, Lewis, always for tuning in. His first question is, have you ever tried these AirPlay apps for Fire TV to AirPlay with your iPhone? Are they any good? Kodi is supposed to do it as well, but that doesn't work in my case. I think nobody still can beat Apple's AirPlay on Apple TV, unfortunately. So yeah, Lewis, I actually use an app called Air Receiver. It was one of the earlier on AirPlay apps available for the Fire TV. It works pretty well, but yeah, like you said, AirPlay is not an open protocol. So Apple does not tell people how to connect to AirPlay. So every AirPlay solution outside of the Apple TV is going to be basically backwards engineered. And so none of them are that stable. You know, if you want solid AirPlay from your iPhone or iPad or even a Mac, the Apple TV just hands down, it's so smooth. It's solid. I mean, one of the reasons I'm planning to get the new Apple TV is literally just for AirPlay. I'm not probably going to use it to stream things. I want to, you know, check it out to compare it to the Fire TV, but AirPlay is the number one reason I want that device. But that said, I've had good luck with Air Receiver. I just realized right now saying this, I have not used it with iOS 9 yet. And a lot of times when Apple jumps from different iOS versions, they change things with AirPlay. So the older kind of, you know, backwards engineered apps stop working. So I don't know for sure. Definitely check the reviews of AirReceiver before buying it or trying to install it to see, are people complaining that it's not working with iOS 9? It's very possible. I do know there was a new app that just came out for the Fire TV. It was a bit pricey. I think it was like $8 or $9 that specifically said it works with iOS 9 AirPlay. I haven't tried it myself, but if you need iOS 9 AirPlay, that app I think specifically says it works with it, so you can kind of give it a shot. Amazon customer service is really good about refunding your money if an app doesn't work. So even if an app is expensive, I say go ahead and buy it, try it out. If it doesn't work right, or if it's, you know, flaky and it's not reliable, get onto Amazon's customer service and ask them for a refund. Tell them the app didn't work. They'll totally refund your money. So yeah, AirReceiver is the one that I've used in the past. I haven't used it with iOS 9 again, but you know, give that one a shot. The other question from Lewis is, I assume you are a cord cutter like most of us. Is that right? When did you cut the cord? What is your setup? And cord cutting is so much better than old-fashioned cable linear TV. Any idea how TV will look on the long run? Thanks as always. Have a nice weekend, Lewis. Yeah, definitely. I'm a cord cutter. Almost a cord never, actually. Last time I had cable was about 10 years ago in college. My roommates and I, or my housemates, and I had, you know, chipped in together to get a cable subscription. And that's really the only time I ever myself personally paid for a cable. And, you know, then when I moved out on my own, I never had cable myself. As far as my setup, initially, when I first cut the cord, I actually had a home theater PC that I built. It was a Intel Atom based PC with Ion graphics that basically did hardware decoding of H.264. And so that was basically my first kind of, you know, setup for all of my content. I basically always had a PC connected to the TV of some sort. And I still have one right now, actually, but I don't use it that way. So I just use it as a media server, essentially, through my Fire TV. And like I mentioned previously, back then, you know, before all of these streaming services were available, I used to, you know, buy DVDs, buy Blu-rays, rip them myself, and store them onto my, you know, PC connected to my TV. And that's how I would watch my content, basically. And then when the Fire TV came out, I basically switched over to that being my main device. And I just stream that old collection of DVDs and Blu-rays from my media server, which, you know, my old home theater PC is now just acting as media server for Kodi through the Fire TV. And that's how I use my kind of purchased content. But mostly I really just stream all my content either from YouTube, Amazon Prime Video. I'll rent movies here and there from Amazon also if I want something newer. And, you know, Netflix, those kind of services are basically how I consume, you know, most of my content these days. I don't buy DVDs and movies that much. Occasionally, if there's a movie I don't want to wait for it to be available on streaming, then I'll still, like, you know, buy the Blu-ray or something like that and watch it that way. But for the most part, I just stream through either the subscription services or through free services. All right, next question here is from Antonio. He says, hi, I have a Fire TV second gen imported from Germany. I'm from Spain and I tested it yesterday. I've noticed that the USB port doesn't work with any pen drives or hard drives formatted in FAT32. Even a USB wireless keyboard doesn't work. Is my unit defective? Before I get into the rest of his comments, no, your unit is not defective. I'm almost guaranteeing you that you have gone and enabled ADB over USB. From the settings system menu, if you go down to developer options, and you probably have enabled ADB, which is fine. But once you enable ADB, it turns on another option that says enable ADB over USB. If you enable that, then the USB port cannot be connected to, you know, you cannot connect a hard drive or USB peripherals to the USB port if you have ADB over USB enabled. So that's probably your problem. I've gotten several emails from people who basically have the same issue telling me USB port's not working. Every single time it's been that they inadvertently, you know, unknowingly enabled ADB over USB. So just turn that off. I bet you everything's going to start working. He also says, also very disappointed with the lack of 24p. Seeing this material over 60 hertz is not good. I'm switching over the same material using the smart share of my OLED TV and it plays smooth and perfect. And in the Fire TV, there is a micro jump caused by the pull down 3.2 that do the thing. I hope a near future update will fix this because the Fire TV works very fast playing 4K H.264 HEVC using 5 gigahertz Wi-Fi at a lightning speed. Very happy in this side, really. As far as 24p, it does not look like Amazon is going to officially support it, unfortunately. I've mentioned this previously in another podcast, but Amazon's official stance right now, if you, you know, dive into their tech support and you, you know, their tech support usually doesn't know much about this. So then they'll tell you they're going to contact their engineering team and then they'll get back to you. Eventually, when they get back to you, their official thing is that the Fire TV does not support 24 hertz over 1080p, unfortunately. Who knows if they're going to fix this in the future. So the first generation Fire TV, it's capable of switching over to 24p if you go into the resolution cycling. I'll include a link in the show notes on how to get into that. But as far as the second generation Fire TV, you can still tell the Fire TV to switch to 24p because if you go into resolution cycling, which you do by pressing, I believe, up and rewind on the remote for 5 seconds, then the Fire TV will start to cycle through alternate resolutions and it'll actually give you the option to do 1080p and 720p at 60 hertz, 50 hertz, 30 hertz, 25 hertz, and 24 hertz. So it actually gives you all of those options and you can just hit select when it gets to the one you want and it'll stop on that one. But unfortunately, on the second gen Fire TV, it doesn't actually change the output. It thinks it's set to 24p, but it doesn't actually change the resolution coming out. I think that part of it is a bug. So hopefully they fix that bug and it actually does end up unofficially supporting 24p through that resolution cycling. But I don't have my high hopes on it. Unfortunately, if you are, you know, if you have your heart set on 24p, the Fire TV is not the device for you, unfortunately. The Nvidia Shield, much more expensive device, does seem to support 24p. They just added that in their latest update. So definitely, you know, check that out if that's important to you. For those unaware of what this whole 24p and 3:2 pulldown issue is, so when most content, which is shot at either 29 frames per second or 24 frames per second, roughly right around there, when that content is played back at 60 hertz, which is basically 60 frames per second, you know, your TV is refreshing the picture 60 times every second. It has to kind of do a conversion from the 24 or 29 frames that the video file is outputting to what the TV is refreshing at. And so, you know, because those are not divided, you know, you can't divide 24 into 60 evenly, you get either duplicate frames being created. And so you get a bit of a stutter here and there. Most people don't even notice it. You know, most people aren't even aware it's an issue. You know, it's only people who are really hardcore dedicated to getting, you know, pristine picture out of their device. But yeah, if you care about that, unfortunately, the Fire TV is not the device for you. It doesn't seem like they're going to support it officially. The main problem, actually, I believe, why they're not supporting it is because of the UI. They want the UI to output at 60 hertz so that it's smooth. When you set the first generation Fire TV, for example, to output at 24p, and again, I'll include a link in the notes on how to do that. For those who have the first gen Fire TV, I know Antonio, you're talking about the second gen one here, but when you set the first gen Fire TV to 24p, the UI is horrendous because it's not optimized for such a low frame rate. So when you're flipping through the UI and you're looking through apps, for example, and you're going through the menus, it's very stuttery and it doesn't look good because, you know, that UI was optimized for 60 frames per second, essentially. And when you switch down to 24, it just doesn't look good. And so that's kind of, I think, the reason why Amazon is not supporting 24p, because then they need to redo their whole UI. And, you know, that's just not something they seem to want to do right now. Contact Amazon support, like I always do with all of these issues. The Fire TV team, the actual team that's working on the OS, working on the software, they do read these issues. When they get contacted by a lot of people on a certain issue, that basically tells them that should be what they work on next. So, you know, once they get all these bugs set and they're working on new features, if a lot of people are asking for 24p, then there's a chance that will be added to the device. So definitely contact them if that's what you want. Next question here is from Chad. He says, I am new to the Fire TV and have heard about, quote, free coins. I did some searching and saw that there are sometimes promotions for free app that then offer coins. My question, is there a current list of these apps? Also, when on the Amazon App Store, is there any area on the app noting any coin reward for a particular app? I can't seem to find any apps with coins, so I don't exactly know how to check. Yeah, Chad, so in the past, roughly right around when the Fire TV, the first gen, first came out, so this was around like May of last year, there were a lot of these free apps that still gave coins. So basically, purchasing the free app would get you free coins. And I always cover them whenever they come around on my site. I have a link in the menu on my site. If you go to deals, you'll see free app coin deals. Nowadays, they don't come around very often. I can't even remember the last time we had a true 100% free coin deal. So, but I do cover them. There is no list of apps that do this because there are no apps that do this right now. Usually when this happens, it only lasts a few days. As far as apps that offer a reward, there are a lot of apps for both the Fire TV and just general Amazon App Store that when you purchase the apps with actual money, you get free coins back. So say you, for example, you'll buy an app for 99 cents and you'll get 30 coins back. So usually right around there, that 30% back in coins is where, you know, is the sweet spot, it seems. A lot of apps that offer coins back do it that way. Unfortunately, through the actual Fire TV interface, they don't tell you how many coins back you get for certain apps. But if you go to Amazon's website and sort, you know, go to their app section and sort by Fire TV apps, one of the options on the side is to only show apps that give you coin rewards. So you can see how many coins you'll get back on Amazon.com's website, on their listing for the app, but you can't see it on the Fire TV itself. Our next question here is from Vulcan. He says he's come from the kind of Apple ecosystem where security is a bit tighter, and he's worried about sideloading apps from unknown sources. He says he is downloading apps onto a tablet through the Google Play Store and then sending those over to his Fire TV. But his question is, what am I missing with not having Kodi? Also, am I being overly paranoid about apps from unknown sources? I say, yeah, you are being a little overly paranoid, but it depends on where you're getting your apps from. If you're just Googling an app name, for example, and downloading it from some obscure, you know, like file hosting site like MediaFire or something like that, then you definitely have no idea what that app is doing. There are Android, you know, malware, viruses, that kind of stuff. So I would definitely be cautious about just downloading a random APK and sideloading that way. But if it's from a legitimate source, like, for example, downloading it straight from Kodi, I would have no worries about that. Or if it's, say, a sideloaded app that the developer himself is like posting on XDA, for example, like, say, Firestarter, I would have no problems there. I mean, if there's a stream of people commenting and saying that the app is working great and the developer seems like a legitimate person and supporting the app, you know, like Firestarter's developer is, you know, I would not be too worried there. What you're missing with Kodi, there are a lot of media players out there. You know, Kodi is at its core just a media player, so it will just play files stored on network storage and all that. The beauty about Kodi is that it's kind of a really good all-in-one app that will organize your media library, will pull down thumbnails and artwork, and so you can, you know, search for movies if you have a big library that you've ripped, or say you have a DVR that records over-the-air programming or TV shows and you want to access them in a nice interface. That's the beauty of Kodi. But, you know, if you just want to navigate a file system and play files, then yeah, you might not need Kodi, and just kind of installing any old generic media player, as long as it's working for you, is totally fine. Again, the beauty of Kodi is its interface, I think. You know, it can also play almost any file you throw at it, which is nice. So I find that Kodi can play some files that other media players cannot play. But yeah, give Kodi a shot. I think you are a little paranoid on the whole, you know, not installing apps from unknown sources and only getting them from, it looks like, Amazon and Google Play. But, you know, as long as the APK you're downloading is from a source that you trust, like the developer himself, I would not worry about installing apps from unknown sources. So next question from Clint Mason. He says, will Gen 2 ever get Llama to work so we may make an icon a shortcut for Kodi? Most likely no. So it looks like the Llama developer, the guy who made Llama, has pretty much abandoned the app. He's not doing updates, so, you know, it's not basically compatible with Fire OS 5, and I think it has just general issues with Lollipop. It's not like a Fire OS 5 thing. Llama is not working well with Android Lollipop. So unfortunately, it doesn't look like we'll ever get that, but hopefully we'll have other ways in the near future of getting shortcuts for Kodi to show up on the home screen. But yeah, it doesn't look like Llama is going to be the way. Clinton also says, do you format the USB and SD card to FAT32? Yeah, you have to. So the Fire TV can only support FAT32 file systems. It can't take NTFS or Apple's file system, only FAT32. So if you plug in a micro SD card into the Fire TV that is not formatted in FAT32, it will offer to format it for you. A USB drive, when you connect it to the Fire TV, it actually does not prompt you anything. If it's not FAT32, it just won't mount it. So yeah, you have to format both the micro SD card and the USB drive to FAT32 so that they work with the Fire TV. All right, that will conclude episode number 11 of the AFTV Newscast. Thanks for watching. If you are watching live or watching after the fact on YouTube, if you're listening to the audio version on either iTunes or through the RSS feed, thanks there. I'd love if you guys left a like on the video on YouTube or left a review, say in iTunes for the podcast version. Those are really appreciated. You can always follow me on Twitter. I like to post things there. A lot of times I'll post information there that I don't actually want to write a full article about. You know, things that I hear. Yeah, thanks for watching, and hopefully I can see you guys here next week.